Hey everybody, welcome back to Brains, Bibles, and Beyond. This is part five with our discussion with Brandon, and this is the third interview we had with him,
right?
And part two of that third interview, and we kind of cut it off last week. We're getting right back into it. Immediately we start with one of Joel's questions, and he has kind of a two-part question. We get right into it and kind of go from there. And, you know, right. Eventually we drag ourselves to the end and try to get to a good finish spot.
You know, dragging is the right word, because this whole episode, or this whole interview, I should say, which is episodes 4 and 5, boy, we're pretty wiped. I know for me, I think possibly the most wiped. I don't know. That's what I feel like. Yeah. Brandon came on. He was tired too. We're definitely not on our A game, which sometimes makes it more interesting.
None of us were. So you may hear a little rambling. I cut out some of the rambling when it got really excessive. And nothing was actually being said.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to lose any of the content. And so most of that stayed in there, especially on this one.
There's still good stuff.
There's still good stuff. Yes. Just because we took too long to get to it doesn't mean there's not good stuff.
Right.
But you can tell the body language. There's some there's some staring and some going on. but it's still good content, good questions. Mm-hmm. And so listen through to the end. We're not trying to downplay it. It's still good, but we're making excuses.
Yeah, definitely worth your time.
But we were definitely, I was in the swing of getting ready for camp. Joel hadn't slept for a month or so. You could tell he's a little tired. Brandon, once again, you know, I think we started that day with him saying, man, I'm really tired today, guys, you know. But we went through, you know, and this was like a 2-hour interview. So
it went a long time.
You know, so we're in the second half of that. So it was getting long. But we had a lot of content we wanted to get through, and it was good content. So it jumps right off. Joel mm-hmm. goes right into question to start with, and kind of proceeds from there.
Yeah. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
With your coffee. Mm-hmm. So good.
Mm-hmm.
We have two things, and they deserve their own category, really. So I guess let me get the purpose of this. And the purpose of this is to say, you know, Brandon, you brought up really good things that challenge the idea of the catastrophe model, as in the global flood model. And I really appreciate that. I just want to offer you the same favor of poking at the we'll say old earth model.
Sure
that way. Two different things, I guess. The you know what, let me just focus on this one, and if we get to the other one, that's great, but if not, it's okay. The one I'd want to focus on is the lack of transitional fossils. And you have early on, you have admitted that both of our sides have our hoaxes. And it's been true where I've even found stuff that would have the same conclusion as me, and come to find out it's not good information. And there's no actual source. There's no actual anything. It's not substantial. And I've been so gravely disappointed. And then then with, you know, others too, you know, like, you know, Nebraska man, Piltdown man, things like that, you know, but where there would be something that's made from something else. So there's transitional fossils. You know the story, what I'm making here, but for the audience's sake, real quick, I'll just say, as Brandon has this beautiful illustration, and which he'll admit even is oversimplified, but, you know, the idea of you have these layers, you have the different types of animals, there seems to be a progression going up in the layers, as far as physically and or cognitively, you know, that kind of thing. And so my challenge is where are the transitions as things are evolving? And of course, as a creationist, I would believe in microevolution, small adaptations, but macroevolution would be like species to species, like a whole nother thing, like, you know, amphibian becoming a reptile type of deal. And so I would disagree with that. And one glaring thing that I see is a lack of transitional fossils in the fossil record. So Brandon, please go ahead and push back on that.
Sure. So I see tons of them. Like they're all transitional fossils toward one another. I'm trying to remember the name off the top of my head, Ichthostega, maybe, of the the amphibian to reptile one. Am I getting that right? Fish plate, which is, or is that one of the ones that's fish to amphibian? I might be wrong about that.
What was the
But
name
you know, the
again?
thing that I know, Ichthyostega. I can't spell it,
I'll get it
but I
close
can
enough.
say it. But I guess what is so like the easiest one that I remember growing up is like paleontologists, well, evolutionary paleontologists say that birds evolved from dinosaurs, but the one fossil they can point to is the Archaeopteryx. But obviously that is a, and then here, right, like creationists were would disagree, like some saying like it's obviously a dinosaur. It's not a bird at all. That's ridiculous. And then, like the other half of the unearthed creationists that I would read would say, it's obviously a bird. Why would anyone think it's a dinosaur? Which, you know, is kind of an interesting divide to have. But since the 90s, there have been so many bird-like dinosaurs and dinosaur-like birds that have been found. And so it's, I think that that's just one example of where we used to think that there were missing links, but it turns out that, oh my gosh, like when we finally found the fossils, right, they're just everywhere. So I guess I would ask you, like, what are you specifically thinking of when it comes to like what two types of animals do you think we don't have anything between?
Well, to make it, I guess, personal, it would be as primates, and as far as I understand it, the evolutionary model, they would say that, we're not from primates, we are primates, we're just highly evolved primates. That would be like a Dawkins answer anyways. And so I would say, well, where is that transition happening over such a long period of time? We don't really find anything definitive. I see different types of human beings. I mean, if I were to go to different parts of even the world today and we were to only look at skeletons, I mean, you would have a very broad variety, but there's basically human-like things going on there. And so even different shaped skulls, different heights, there's even some deformities, and things like that. And so, that's even just today as is, around the world. I don't see a slow process of one animal becoming another animal. What I see in the fossil record is distinct animals. And of course, there are similarities between some animals, but I don't think there's enough evidence to show that there was a transition. And a lot of those you would have even still today. Even like that brings into the other item of living fossils, the idea that there was something super, would look. I know we're staying away from dates, but the idea of being dated, being observed to be very old, like a dragonfly or something, right? And then we see like the same dragonflies today, for example. So then there'd be like no evolution there. So it's a curious thing of what would even make something evolve? Why do we think it has to evolve? Where's the evidence of the evolving? Those kind of all go together, I think, and we're looking at the fossil record. You said you said they're all transitional fossils, which is interesting. I've never heard someone say that before, but I don't see the for the life that we have, and what we can see in the fossils. What's the in betweens for the things that we don't have today that's in the fossil record? Where would be the in between from that to this, or how are you working that out?
Sure. So I'm hearing a few things. One is a question of why are species, tell me if you're saying this, why are species, why do they come in clumps? Like, why is there a species of this and of this, but not of like something that's really closely between those two species, right? So like, what, yeah, why are they, why are species discrete from one another?
So
Is
like when
that
you
one of the
find
things that you're saying?
possibly. So you're it's like if you were to see the Triceratops, for example, then they're all basically the same. If we see a clam, they're all basically the same, basically. You have you name it, whatever animal we have, it's all basically the same like that. Yeah, that's so that'd be what I'm saying. You correct?
So there's I'm hearing another thing that you're saying is why are there still sharks, or why are there still coelacanths, right? The famous one. If they, were supposed to have died out 60 million years ago, but they're still around today. Am I correct that that is one of the other things that you're saying?
As a living fossil?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yep.
It's one of the usual go-tos, people talking about living fossils.
But I mean,
And then
dragonfly,
I'm
I think,
hearing
is really
the
easy because everybody sees
sure,
those.
sure, sure, sure. Okay, so I can address that one. And then I'm hearing the specifics about human evolution. I think I can address all of those. Let me start with the one that I think that is the hardest for me to understand, and that why is it that we have distinct species at all? Why don't we have just like one type of animal, like totally morphing, as you look between different types of animals into one another? My understanding in evolutionary biology is that this is technically an unsolved problem. There are lots of theories, but none of the theories really perfectly explain the biological data that we have. And you and your listeners might be familiar with a famous debate of punctuated equilibrium between Stephen Jay Gould, the evolutionist, and Richard Dawkins,
We should
where
probably explain
Gould
that to the
argued.
audience.
Sure. And thank you, because this point is frequently I will say misrepresented by creationist authors who I think know better sometimes. Up till Gould, who just, was in a Simpsons episode, he died in 2005 or something. Everyone thought that animals were sort of constantly evolving. But Gould was a paleontologist. He studied fossil snails. And he said, look, like one of the things that we see through the evolutionary record is that we have like roughly the same fossils for like millions of years, and all of a sudden they change. So what the ever-loving heck? What is going on there? And he had this punctuated equilibrium where you have these long periods of equilibrium, where everything kind of stays the same, and then all of a sudden, bam, right? They're punctuated by these brief little bits of evolution. And Richard Dawkins kind of argued the other side of like, no, what's really happening is they're always kind of consistently evolving, but it doesn't get captured in the fossils, right? Or something, something, something. Maybe because a lot of changes to organisms don't actually happen to the bones, right? They happen to the coloration or to the family structure, or like what part of the tree the rat lives in, or whatever. I don't know, I'm making stuff up. This is an actual like live debate still, at least to some extent, in evolutionary theory. I will just say that there really are models that I find like, yeah, pretty darn compelling for like what is going on there. And I can explain them, but I don't know if we want to take the time. But I am happy to. I'll just say that Stephen Jay Gould's position is sometimes represented as the hopeful monster position, where you have like one kind of animal and it lays an egg, and all of a sudden like there's this mutation, and like really like 100 different mutations at once, and then this wonderfully fully formed animal that is a different species hatches out of the egg. That is most assuredly not what Stephen Jay Gould was saying, because it's moronic. Because to get 100 mutations at the same time that all work together and do not kill the organism is just it beggars the imagination. There's no way mathematically that's going to happen once, much less every time that evolution happens. And as people have pointed out, if okay, say it's a new species, who is it going to mate with? It's gotta find a member of the opposite the sex that is that it can mate with at the same time in the same area, right? It's just ridiculous. But if you see your enemy believing ridiculously foolish things that are false in the face of it, you have to always check, is that the thing that your opponent is actually believing, or just the thing that your side is saying? I hear this kind of nonsense from evolutionists all the time, right? Of all creationists, they think that God planted all of the fossils to test our faith. I think I have direct evidence of two people that I've ever been able to find out about actually believing that. And surely there must be more, But
Yeah.
like, this is not what the young creationist community is actually believing. Sorry, I've gone kind of meta. It's not helpful. I want to refer to the reply to the living fossil and then the human evolution, but do you want to reflect back or say anything back to what I've just said?
So I guess with punctuated equilibrium, I guess the why do we have to have that? I guess is my question. Is it only because we have to have an old Earth? There has to be, and so then we have to believe in punctuated equilibrium. Or why would that be? Because in other words, there's no evidence of it. We just see completely different animals, and those animals are like each other. And so, is it simply to preserve the old Earth model, or do you think there's something else going on there?
Punctuated, I'll answer that in two different ways. Punctuated equilibrium is an attempt by evolutionists to make sense of why it really looks like species. I think the average survival of the species in the fossil record is something like 6 million years. That's a long time without very much change, right? So like that's weird. That's just really weird. So how do you make sense of that? I think that the explanations that I understand from that like are eminently reasonable explanations. So I don't think that like the fact that this idea exists should make us doubt evolutionary theory. It's mostly a question of applying ecology to evolutionary theory, which hadn't been done until fairly recently. When an ecosystem is stable, and ecosystems are usually pretty darn stable, right? They kind of like find their midpoint. You mess up one thing, you kill all the foxes, and then there are more rabbits. But then there's so many rabbits, there's so much food on the ground that the foxes spring back, right? Everything kind of comes back to normal. You need some sort of like really big cataclysmic sometimes shift to really knock everything out of balance and like to force animals to find a new equilibrium is the explanation there. But I will say this. If one is a young Earth, if one is a flood catastrophist and says, and focuses on the punctuated equilibrium, it seems like one is then acknowledging that what one finds in the fossil record is even more fine-tuned than what I've been arguing. That in fact you have like one species that looks a certain way, and it persists for a long time, and then all of a sudden, it jumps and it doesn't like wander back or whatever mostly, right? It jumps and then it goes again. So I really feel like if someone is arguing punctuated equilibrium, they've already agreed that the fossil record is incredibly ordered from, as you might say, simplicity to complexity. So I feel like you're already some kind of evolutionist if you're arguing that point.
You would hold to it though, right? You'd hold to punctuated equilibrium being the explanation, or you would say it's just one of the possibilities, or what?
I mean, I think it's the one that seems to make the most sense. And like Stephen Jay Gould said that, like it seems likely that like the period that on average that a species then like evolves from one species to another is something like 100,000 years. Did he say that? I think it was 100,000 years. Maybe he said 10,000 years. I think it's 100,000 years though. That's a long time. Right? Like that is an order of magnitude longer than you guys like think that the Earth has existed, but it's such a short time that you might not see any evidence of it at all inside of the fossil record because most layers of muck get ripped away by the next layer of muck or whatever, right? By a big rainstorm. They don't get squished down and preserved forever. Nothing is forever. So yeah, Stephen Jay Gould would just say that like the actual like maybe it's just 10,000 years. 10,000 years of evolving happened sort of between the scenes, so to speak. Because it's too fast.
We
The
need
Earth is too
to
fast.
keep moving
Rocks
on
too fast to
here.
capture.
Okay, okay.
Keep moving on.
All right, all right. We'll keep. I would just for the sake of just to put it out there. So I would challenge the idea of mutations being helpful. I would challenge that, and I would say, with unsolved problems, can we be sure of the theories? Just a reminder that evolution is just theories, and so I think one of the key takeaways that I want to make, which I think actually you would agree with, is If it is just a theory, we should teach it as theory and involve other theories even. So like even I would appreciate if in a like a public school setting, you would have evolution being called theory and assumption, things like that, and say, and here's something else. You think about the amount of the world that does believe in some sort of a creation or a young earth kind of thing. I think it deserves recognition, at least to counterbalance some other things, knowing that it is theory. We don't have, it's not a hardcore 100% evidential thing, and so just with that, it definitely merits consideration and investigation as we've been talking about. For time's sake, we can move on. I know you have things to say. I know you do. And for audiences out there, this Brandon is an educated guy, a good science teacher, and I can tell that just the way he interacts with us and things like that. And so I know there's things to say. Science is Weird is a pretty cool business he's got. You can check him out for more things that. So I'm saying all that 'cause we're cutting that part off. And so I don't want
That's
that to be
fine.
frustrating. So
No,
anyways.
I'll let you have the last word on that. That's wonderful. I'll just let me just chime in to say that we have lots of young Earth creationists in our audience for Science is Weird, and I work hard to make sure that their voices are brought into the science curriculum. Like the project that we are undertaking with Science is Weird is to come up with the great science curriculum that brings all of the disciplines together and shows how wonderful they all are. And let me just say, we don't have enough young Earth creationists. I want young Earth creationists in it to give pushback and to give their own perspectives. And we take on controversial issues and we do. I will say, I'm so proud of like how whenever we take on a controversial issue that science has something to weigh in on, right? We work really hard to represent the sides as respectfully and as powerfully as we possibly can. So I'm totally down with what you're saying.
Good. And
Awesome.
I'll review the employee contract later, Brandon. Okay. Calm down. I thought you'd like that. Okay. There is one more. You have the last question.
Oh yeah. So this is not going to this is the weakest point because it's not. I don't know. It's a point exactly.
I'd give you 5 minutes, but
Last
that doesn't
time.
matter anymore.
All right. Oh my gosh! Look at the
last one
clock. I
was
didn't even look at
20.
the clock when you guys were saying that before. I thought that'd be rude. Oh my
No, no.
gosh. Okay.
No,
So
go for it. This finishes off.
before,
You get 20 minutes. Make it fair.
I'm not going to take that.
Take what you want.
So I last time we talked about these two different types of clams, right? These clams that we have nowadays and these I can't even remember the names of them. Broccoli, I can't remember the names of them. And Holly, oh, they seem like pretty
Oh, the
darn similar animals.
brachiopods.
And you only they were broccoli. That's okay. I think that sounds right. And the ancient ones like lived in these layers, right? They didn't live in these layers. We only find the remains in the bottom layers before the dinosaurs, and then we only find modern clams after that. But like they look the same, right? Like what the heck? And I thought this is a weird example. I'm not happy with this example. And Joel, you had said the, this idea that like different types of animals lived in different types of places. That is maybe part of how we can explain, if we want to, why we only find them in certain layers of the rock and not other layers of the rock. So I thought, you know what? Like that really deserves that. Like, if I can just like be honest, I was frustrated at the time. Like, what? Why is he not totally agreeing with me? And then afterwards, I thought, no, like this is great. This is like I need to find more examples of this. And like this is the way the conversation moves forward. So thank you for that pushback. You did a great job of it. I happened to have run across a YouTube video that I recommend everybody watch. It's a SciShow video, and it is called Modern Animals with Prehistoric Twins right there. Oh, my daughter was watching one about Mount Athos, the Eastern
Is that
Orthodox.
different than living fossils?
Correct, correct, correct.
Okay.
In fact, crucially so, and I'll explain how. Anyway, Modern Animals with Prehistoric Twins, I recommend it to everybody. So these three are three of the ones from there. So this is what we call a lacewing. You see them outside sometimes. It's kind of pathetic little bugs. They're not very interesting. What's interesting is that We find these animals that everybody agrees are related to lacewings. They're a type of lacewing. And we find them in the fossil record from, oh gosh, like the early dinosaur period up to I think the Triassic to the early Cretaceous, maybe before the dinosaurs also. But they die out at the early Cretaceous, which is the last part of the dinosaurs things after the Jurassic. They're sometimes called Jurassic butterflies. And my gosh, like they look like butterflies. And there are some differences with them that you can tell that they are in fact not butterflies. They're actually bigger. I don't know if they always have eye spots. Their eye spots are more prominent when they have them. But like, man, like if you found that, you just say, oh, that's a butterfly. Their antennae are slightly different. You find them sometimes like preserved three-dimensionally in amber, which is just really, really
That's cool.
cool. But you only find them in layers that you there's actually one exception. This is a little bit where they overlap. Where you find them in something like here to here. And then you find butterflies, of course, all the way up to the modern day, but like all the way, all the way up here. Why do you never find butterflies down here? Why do you never find lace wings up here? That kind of lace wing up here. They're almost identical bugs. It's just that they are related to different species, different types of insects. So weird, right? So you think, well, that's a weird example. Who cares about that? Okay, I got a weirder one for you. So this is called a Castroclaudus. Castro is Latin for beaver. Caudus, sorry, caudus, which means tail, so a beaver tail. We found their fossil. I wish I had a better picture of this fossil skeleton, but what everybody agrees from this fossil skeleton is that there is an actual imprint of the tail. It's not just like where they cut it here. There actually is this like imprint of a beaver-like flat tail going on here, and there are other fossils that we find of these guys too. And they have fur. You can even see some of the, I think you can see the fur imprints on there. This is a low quality picture. I wasn't able to find anything better. And there's some imprints of webbing between their toes. So like this is something like a fossil, if not a beaver, right? Then like an otter or something like that. But the thing is, this is not a mammal. It is one of these reptiles that lived alongside the dinosaurs. You find them in dinosaur rocks. But they're covered in fur. There's a lot of things in the dinosaur period that were covered in fur. So why are beavers only found? I don't know when beavers first evolved. There's used to be some big ones recently, like the size of Volvos. So like beavers are found up here, or maybe even backed over here or something. I don't know. And these guys are only, I think that they were like early dinosaurs. I think they're like this. But like they live in ponds. right? Like they live in the same kinds of environments. Like, why do you find Castrocauda in there, but beavers in there, right? Like, you can't say that they live in like fundamentally different things. You're like, that's a weird thing. That fossil wasn't very good. Like, I don't really trust it. Okay, I got another one. There are more of these. I thought three was a good number. You look at this, and you're like, oh, what is that? Oh, it's a crocodile. It's a big crocodile. And you're basically right. Except, and I did not know this, by the way, about crocodiles. I was told, like, oh yeah, there's a crocodiles back in dinosaur times. Here's the interesting thing: these things that you see drawn in dinosaur times, unless they're from the very end of the dinosaur time, they're not actually crocodiles. I'm using crocodiles as kind of an inclusive form of alligators, crocodiles, gharials, caimans, that sort of thing, because this is a modern croc skeleton. All modern crocodiles, alligators, etc., crocodilians. Their nostrils are at the tip of their noses. All of these ones, this is a bad picture. I think I got a better one here, but you can see here their nose hole is like up near their eyes. They came in a lot of different types. There were types of them that looked a lot like this, that weird gharial that we had, some that looked like alligators, some that looked like Nile crocodiles, some bigger, some smaller, lots of different types. But there are these telltale differences, like where their nostrils are, or like sometimes these weird things about their spine. I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't know what's going on with their spine there. There's something about how their ankle is built fundamentally differently from any crocodilian that exists nowadays. And so I'm getting rid of this. And so, like, why is it that, like, these crocodile-like things that looked like all the world to have fulfilled all of the same niches as our modern crocodiles, I can't say the word all, but the modern niches that our modern crocodilians do, why do we find them from, okay, I think I'm gonna get this right. I'm not positive though. We see them here all the way up to here. And then we find, is that right? I think that is. To the early Cretaceous, this is the Cretaceous right here. Here's the Jurassic, here's the Triassic. And then we see modern crocs start right here at the very end of the Cretaceous by T-Rexes, by Triceratops, and then go all the way up. They're not related, or I should say they're not closely related. You can tell that, like, if you're a biologist and I'm not, but like based on like how the skeletons are arranged, right? They're very clearly related to different types of reptiles. Probably crocodiles are actually more closely related to dinosaurs than these things were. These are more like lizards or something like that. But like they seem to live identical lives. Why do you not only not see them in the same rocks, but like why do you see them in totally different rocks one after the other? Woo! Okay, there. That was my attempt to kind of back up the idea that like, well, different kinds of animals live in different environments. And so, yeah. How do you get their bones stratified into these different things, discriminated into these different things based on a global flood? And I'm done. I wish I had more tea. I need more tea right now.
Yes. I'll have a couple. I'll share a couple thoughts. I won't take too long on this, and I don't pretend to say that this is definitively the answer. Okay, I'm not pretending that. Okay, but two thoughts. Number one, definitely believe that animals can speciate, and when animals speciate, a lot of times certain species go extinct, and as animals speciate, sometimes they can look radically different. From each other. You think about even like the old Darwin's finches kind of thing, right? They're all stinking finches, but they speciate, right? And we see a lot of that in the Galapagos Islands, all that whole thing there. You even have the land iguanas, the marine iguanas, and the hybrid iguanas, and quite a bit different. They're actually all living there, together. And that's totally possible for things like that to happen. I'm totally open to the idea that there was species in some, I mean, there was speciation and some of those species went extinct. That's one thought. Another thought would be with the global flood, with the animals that went on board the ark, God chose the animals. Noah didn't go out and get them. God chose them. We would not say that every species of animal was represented on that ark. Not at all. We would say kinds, which would be you have to understand or remember that there was not they didn't have the modern 2023 classification of animals back then, and that language or culture and whatnot. And so we see the word kind, which basically the one thing that we kind of can see that's consistent is that if it is of the same kind, it can reproduce together. That seems to be a consistency with how you tell what a kind is, like a cat kind, a dog kind, a horse kind, that kind of thing. So then what made it onto the ark? And then it would easily whatever didn't, you wouldn't see anymore. If it needed air to breathe, that kind of a thing. And so with those two thoughts, I'm open to things. Now, what your point though, I think was more so, hey, look, there's this abrupt ending. There is the one thing going, it stops, another thing goes, and they look real similar. So you say, look, it looks like there's an evolution there. And I'm totally okay with that just being a straight speciation. I'm okay with that, although I understand that's not a bulletproof argument. I understand that. Because you'd say, well, you'd still see the other species, though, right? So it doesn't solve all the issues. I think that with that, though, we have to keep in consideration how much we've actually found. We have found very little for the vertebrae, land animal kind of stuff. What is it like a quarter of a percent of the fossil record is these land vertebrates, and so how many have we found? I don't think it's enough to for a very substantiated claim. But I wouldn't be thrown because of the speciation extinction issue, if that makes sense. But I understand that those are not lock-proof arguments either at the same time.
Well, but I appreciate them, and I think that in the old Earth community, in the Christian old Earth community, right, you get these interesting conversations. It's like, what does a kind mean?
Right.
Side point. Do you know that the word kind is etymologically related to the word genus?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the closest thing I'd say.
Yeah.
Maybe
I
not
mean,
exact.
that's just English. I think it's neat, right? Kind comes from kin. You behave toward kindness is how you're supposed to behave toward kin.
Right.
And kin, right? The K in English used to be a G. Like the word knowledge, right, is a G in Greek. So it's gen, which is birth, which explains why kin is related, right? You give birth. And genus comes from that. Genus literally means general, literally means kin, literally means kind. Random point, people can debate that. The book's written in Hebrew, whatever. Just
Yeah.
think it's geeky fun. But anyway, I think that the thing that I'm not hearing an answer from you in, though, so I want to make sure I understand this, is that I appreciate that the speciation can happen. I appreciate that the notion that, like, well, like, so, like, some species just, like, don't make it on the ark. And I appreciate the idea that we haven't found, all of that much. I guess, from the picture of those lace wings, just for example, right, there was at least, 10 that were there. And so we find lace wings. Did I even remember where I put the lace wings now? Now I'm all confuddled. It's up to here and it's like this or something like that, right? So lace wing, lace wing, lace wing, lace wing, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then butterfly. There's a brief period of the overlap. By the way, we also see flowers appearing here for the first time. So it seems like the older plants that the lace wingy butterflies ate their pollen or their nectar, because there is nectar that outside of flowers sometimes. We don't call it nectar, but it's kind of the same thing. They got the plants themselves got revolutionized and got knocked this kicked to the side by flowers, and butterflies then evolved to take advantage of the flowers. So butterfly, I mean, I don't know how many fossil butterflies that we found, right? But at least 10, let's say. Okay, so again, if we just like say like there are these two periods, and you say, okay, what are the odds that the next time we find a lace wing that it's down here rather than up here? You could simplify this and say, okay, it's one half. Okay, well, every time that you find a new lace wing fossil down there, right, it's one half times one half times one half. And then all the butterfly fossils up here, you're getting to some really small numbers when you have one over this like giant monster number in the denominator of that. If I can just jump in, I know you said that the argument from silence, like you don't like that. One of the things I love about, I was reading a book on intelligent design a little while ago, and there was this intelligent design theory that said, because intelligent design is all about there's not enough. The idea that the universe sprang from nothing, or that the fundamental constants of the universe are like set to like certain things, blah 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 blah. It's such a small chance. And honestly, I think this is a great argument. I think that the practitioners of intelligent design should be making this argument in more places. I think this is a real unsolved mystery of cosmology. But I bring this all together by saying that there was this one intelligent design guy that I was reading, and he said, "Okay, I want to just like say that what is a chance that is so small that we can just like say it's impossible?" I love what he came up with. He did this fun thing where he said, like, okay, like what's the smallest thing that could exist, like smallest fundamental particle? How big is it? How many of them are there? How many directions could they move in the smallest amount of time, which is smaller than a second, but like it's like a certain amount of time, a Planck second or something like that. And like how many Planck seconds have there been from like the Big Bang on? He's an intelligent design guy, he's not even an earth creationist, so he thinks, like 13 point something billion years. Multiply all those numbers together. What you get is a number that is 10 with 150 zeros at the end of it. So he said, okay, this is like the biggest number of events that could have occurred in the history of the universe. And so if you find something that where you say, well, there's only like a one in like one over 10 to the power of 150 chance. He's like, look, let's just call that im. Possible. And I feel like when we're talking about numbers, like we're talking about even for the butterflies and the lace wings, without even bringing in the poor triceratops, we're actually creeping up pretty quickly. So I shouldn't say creeping. We're actually moving up pretty quickly to numbers like that. So I guess the points that I find that intelligent design people make that I find very strong, I would just encourage you to take seriously. in this situation.
Sure.
How's that?
That's good. That's good.
Good.
It's the same, like I see the same stubbornness with when I talk about the, over 300 prophecies that Christ fulfilled in the earthly ministry. The probability of that is insane. It's up there, it's creeping up to that number as well. And usually what it comes down to is more of a faith position. For me, that there's a faith position for the creation and global flood, for sure. 6,000 years, I'm not totally stuck on that necessarily. I think I lean that way, but I would say young Earth for sure for me, with probability. What I'd
What's
say
the
is you
highest number there?
say it again.
What's the highest number there? If like 6,000 is like maybe, but like ten
Oh, the
thousand, a
highest
hundred
number.
thousand?
Okay. For how old it could be, kind of thing. The idea is
Just
that
curious.
if there are zero gaps in genealogies, then you have that something like a 4004 BC date. So I'm open to the idea that there could possibly be gaps in a couple of the genealogies. There's only room for a couple of them. And so if there is, then you think to yourself, well, how many thousands of years could you even pack in to the gaps of the genealogies? Because it would be communication to the Hebrew people of, yeah, you know the whole thing, but here's the big main highlights, the characters you're tracking with me. So it wouldn't be something, I mean, it would be less than 100,000. I'd say probably less than 40,000 years. That's just kind of a ballpark. There's no science or math with that, it's just a random idea of, how many years could you pack in a couple of genealogies that aren't represented there? So the idea is you're not, you definitely would stay in the five digits for sure.
Can I reflect something back to you?
Yeah.
I appreciate you bringing in the prophecies of Christ's messiahship. It's like saying ATM machine, right? Christ's messiahship, Christ's Christhood, the Messiah's messiahship. Okay. I feel like I have seen this change in Christian apologetics since the 90s that I wanted to see if you saw too, which is that in the 90s, postmodernists were the bad guys. Postmodernists were the people who said, like, well, like we can't know anything, at all. I remember like one of the best chapters from, have you read James W. Sire's book, The Universe Next Door by University Press?
Oh, I know of it. I haven't read it.
So good. It's one of the books that I read with students, just like all, I don't, I mean, I've probably read it through six times. I've corresponded with him. I think he's wonderful. I think that book is gold. But like in that book, like he has a really great chapter on postmodernism, The Vanished Horizon, where he talks about how Christianity is based on this idea that like, no, like you really, like the universe is intelligible and we can make sense of the things that we see. We don't have to like escape into, just like, well, like, my belief is. But I feel like I have heard in the last 10 years that the Christian apologists taking what used to be called the postmodernist side by emphasizing that, like, well, like, really everything is, a faith position. And look, like, I'm not anti-postmodernist, right? Like, there's some aspect of, like, that's kind of true and that's kind of false, right? Like, there's a reason that there's a big debate around this. But it's weird to me to hear my Christian friends, and not just you there, but like all of my Christian friends who defend who argue science, making the postmodernist points. Have you seen this too? What do you make of this? What is happening, Joel, to Christian apologetics? I'm so
I
confused.
would say the postmodern view is that you cannot have absolute truth. It would be more of, hey, you can't come down on me and say this is true. We each have our own truth, kind of thing. I think what's happening with modern apologetics, you have the presuppositionalists, big word alert, but the idea is that we all have our built-in bias systems. We all have a different worldview. It's a faith position. And so the idea is there'd be arguments that would assume that there is order in the universe, but but have you ever considered why there's order in the universe? Things like that. So working through it that way. So I would put a distinction there. I don't think it's the same, because the postmodern is more of you can't tell me anything because we can't know truth. Whereas the modern apologist is saying, do you understand why you think the way that you do? Is that fair? Do you think that's fair?
It's good.
Well,
I don't know. I'll have to reflect on that. I just know that I feel like there is an absolute contradiction, or at least a contrast in my mind, between the, confidence of, look, Jesus fulfills X many not predictions, prophecies from the Old Testament, and we can know that, and this is like, look, here's the math. Right, like you made that connection. And when the other side does some math or whatever, they say, well, I mean, like, who can really know anything? And I feel like you can have one of these, but you can't have both of these. And to whatever extent you say, like, well, but the
right.
math, like, who really knows? Like, that undercuts your argument for Christ's messiahship.
I'm saying that I see the same thing on both sides. That's all I'm saying. And so yeah, like so for the layers, what you see in the layers, to bring it back to that, I would say, well, yeah, I mean, there's probabilities there. I'm not totally convinced that there's a connection between the two things. I think with everyone would agree with statistics, there's always an interpretation of statistics, right? There's you could have all sorts of things going on. It's funny to kind of twist statistics sometimes. It's kind of funny. But there's statistics, but then why though? I don't think it necessarily answers the why, but I do think it does bear weight to the argument. I do think it does do that. And by no means do I think that you are actually trying to manipulate things. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying it
Oh,
can.
I didn't interpret that. No,
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
good.
Well, just that was more for the sake of the audience. So just to make sure that I'm not, perceived that way. That's good thoughts, but I think that because of the time that we have here, I think I just want to leave it to the audience and even for our own selves to go back and look through the information that was presented and really search things out and not just take, even if you, the audience member out there says, well, I agree with Joel. Well, but why? I want you actually to pursue these things and to learn and make it your own. And I think, Brandon, you feel the same way. You want a pursuit of knowledge, not just to take some spoon-fed information. That's not the point of this by any means. And so,
Yeah, don't just side with your side because it's your side. Actually, do some research and look into things and make an educated decision on what you believe and why you believe that. And not just, oh,
And keep your.
I agree with Brandon, so everything he says is right. Well, check it out, and vice versa. So, yeah.
As another wrap-up comment, we of course would both agree that there's actually way more stuff to present for even what we've said and then other things that are not said. There's always more evidence. There's always more ways to look at evidence that is seen. And even just today, we came up with that. Okay, I'm already starting to take credit. Brandon came up with the idea of the footprints of how would those be made there with a global flood model and things. And
No,
so.
can I just say that I really think that the word "we" is a is the perfect word for that, because I would not have come up with that if I had not been engaged right in the back of my mind for the last couple of months or whatever, like in this conversation. No, we is the correct word there. And Nate, if I can just add on something, like if I can yes and what you said, right? Like, do your own research on this and stay open to the conversation, because it's magic. This has been so helpful for me for understanding things too. I've loved this. This is what we need to be doing with our lives. This is so great, gentlemen.
Yeah, and I will say throughout these conversations, I've learned stuff like you've taught us things, and just helped me understand things better in general, not just from your evolutionary perspective, although you've helped me understand that better, what like evolution actually teaches. Certainly, like you pointed out a few things. Well, most guys don't really believe that. This is what we really teach, or at least you. Specifically, I know there's always variations amongst everyone, but yeah, this has been fun. So like I've learned things. It's been beneficial, I think, just for myself personally. So
There's been a good
Can I just
model
add
here for
in?
people.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I just add in? I recently had a really nasty run-in with A local Christian, conservative Christian. I have lots of conservative Christians in my life, many as very good friends, and I forgot how nasty that Christians could be sometimes. And this, like, the experience of having this conversation has helped me just like feel really good about conservative Christianity again. Thank you both for representing the love and the forbearance and the kindness that your tradition does so well.
That's
Well,
very
thank you.
meaningful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank
I
you.
appreciate it a lot.
All
All
right,
right.
we
Well,
should wrap her up.
before it gets any tear-jerkers here, we're going to wrap it up.
We kept it close to an hour
Yeah,
and a
okay.
half
It's been,
ish.
yesterday.
All right, everybody, that wraps up episode 5 of our
Woo.
interview series with Brandon.
We made
We made it. You made it. Good job.
it.
So,
Yeah.
this was good. If you have any comments or insights or hate mail or kind
Yeah.
mail, hate mail, send to
Yeah.
Joel.
Yeah.
Fan mail, send to me. You guys know the routine.
Well, and there's always like I could give you 5 hours of content right now, just things I wish I would have said maybe differently, or maybe I should have focused more time on this than that, or there's always things
Yeah.
like that, always.
Yeah. As I was watching through these, doing the editing, I was like, oh man, that would have been a good time to say, whatever.
Yeah.
But, it goes back to the whole thing. Like, we were trying to have a conversation
Right.
and learn from each other. We weren't trying to
Which means a
do,
lot of listening.
yeah, we
Yes.
weren't
Yeah.
trying to necessarily make our point
Right. Exactly.
and pound it in. And Brandon neither was trying to do that,
Yeah.
There were a few things, where you have the tendencies come out, you and Brandon both, would be like, trying to certainly get their point across.
Right.
But
Yeah.
neither were treating this as a debate where you're really going after each other.
Yep.
I mostly was just a silent listener
Yeah.
anyway.
I think mission accomplished with the whole thing.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it
it
was
was good.
good.
It
It
was
was
good.
good. And hopefully it was a good example of how you can actually have a conversation with somebody you disagree with
Right.
and make it civilized. No name
Yeah.
calling.
Yeah.
It was good. So hope you guys enjoyed it. Hopefully you guys learned something. And we will be moving on to new topics. And probably it's a little, we got some new ideas coming up. So
It's
you
going to be
want to
exciting.
see the next episode and listen to the
That's
next
right.
episode. It will be good.
Very good.
Very, very, very good. Like and subscribe. You know what to do. See you next time.